to consider the COVID-19 response and recovery. The first paper there is a paper from me. As you may recall, I explained that we would bring a paper to make sure that we had properly taken on board and transparently published the responses to questions that we had raised prior to our last meeting. There has been another further set of questions which have also been answered that has been circulated this afternoon. I hope you've had a chance to see those, and again we will make sure that those are properly included within both the minutes. I'm not sure we'll necessarily need to take them as a formal paper as well. We also have an opportunity to ask the Chief Executive Leader and Deputy Leader and Stroke Cabinet Member for Resources for any updates they may wish to give us. This is, of course, still of quite a fast-moving environment, and it would be very useful to hear from them, particularly around the financial side of things. And with this, we will bring up our consideration of the Cabinet item on the Isle of Wight Outbreak Control Plan as well. So what I will do now is just to point out that as part of item 4A, there are a number of appendices, one of which is a report from the Institute of Fiscal Studies, which came to a lot of members' attention because of its reference to the Isle of Wight. There is also an appendix that hopefully all members of the council, not just on scrutiny committees, but on cabinet and otherwise, will find useful. They're just bringing together a lot of helpful information on the ways in which we might ask questions around the response to recovery to the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm not going to encourage colleagues, though, for you to ask all of those questions, because I think we'd exceed the 3 hours that we set last time, and I don't think I would be thanked for that. And we also note, of course, that Cabinet accepted 3 of our recommendations from last time. One which wasn't accepted is somewhat overtaken in any case by the outbreak control plan item that Cabinet will be considering on Thursday. So what I'm going to do now is invite the leader, deputy leader, and then the chief executive to give us any short updates that they may wish to give on items, particularly I think around finance, but other matters relating to the easing of the lockdown process. So, leader of the council first.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, colleagues. So, as you rightly say, this is quite a fast-moving situation. The finances for the island, as I've made public already, are in a place where we are not facing a Section 114 situation. This is a situation where, were the council to be facing potential bankruptcy or unable to meet its statutory commitments, then the Section 141 also has a duty to make that clear. That said, people shouldn't read into that our finances are not in a challenging position. But even this week, members will have heard of the latest information regarding funding from the Treasury, which is coming to local authorities. And I'll shortly ask Councillor Hutchinson if he just wants to touch on the 3 key elements of that. I'm glad you mentioned the Institute of Fiscal Studies, and if members haven't had an opportunity to read it, if they go to B16 of the report that's with the papers, the second paragraph highlights that some local authorities are more vulnerable. Torbay and the Isle of Wight stand out even amongst this group. They are at the top 20% most vulnerable on each index, reflecting their elderly population, economic reliance on tourism and hospitality, and pockets of local social economic deprivation. That report, which I had no dealings with, but I've certainly studied, as I've indicated, I raised with the Minister on a telecall with the MP on Monday, amongst a number of things that we discussed around our financial situation, which included reference to the island, the funding that had come. Councillor Hutchinson may allude to also about some funding that we currently have, which is just under review at the moment, and with the overall aim of not so much expecting further additional monies there and then, but to make clear where we stood, because that is a really important document. People all over the country have read that, and we want to make sure that we take the opportunity to maximise our position on this. So on the one hand, I'm telling you we feel we're in a contained financial position, which is impressive considering the amount of money that we've had to spend, not just of the government, but of our own. But we're now working that through with the deputy leader at the forefront of our recovery plan, and I believe that provided we maintain our headlights on the situation, we're going to be able to get through this in a positive way, because the island really does want to come out to recovery. That's all I really need to say, unless you've got any questions on me, but I'll pass you now to Councillor Hutchinson, who could just allude to that particular latest funding aspect, which people may have heard about, and then if the Chief Executive wants to add anything, I'm sure he will do, and then obviously we can take any questions.
Thank you, Leader. Councillor Hutchinson, if you would like to add any comments.
Thank you, Chairman. Can you hear me? And I hope you can see me. I've unmuted and should be on camera.
You are both.
Thank you. The situation, there's a couple of issues on the financial situation. The first one is how we've been managing the government support, which has come in two forms. One form is the rates relief, which we have been giving to all qualifying businesses, and for leisure, tourism and hospitality, that is 100% for the whole of this year, as well as giving out the relief to those that have applied. We are now proactively engaging with others whom we feel are entitled to relief, but either are unaware of it or haven't yet applied. So that's one element that we're working on. The other chunk of government support has been a total fund of about 61 million, and that is for the provision of the 10,000 and 25,000 grants to qualifying businesses to help them keep going. There is, of course, additional support in the furlough arrangements, but we don't manage that. That's done directly. So out of the 50 million, we have included in the payments about 3 million from what's known as a discretionary fund. That gives us a little bit more flexibility, not quite as much as we like, because it came with 11 pages of priorities and instruction, but we used whatever flexibility we had. We opened the fund, took about 2 to 3 weeks to identify the sort of priorities that we were getting and the number of applications. We closed it briefly whilst we modified the qualification criteria to try and bring in more people. And when we reopened the fund, it was very quickly oversubscribed. So we have now had to close that. We've spent out, as I said, overall about 48 million, maybe a little more, because our staff are actually processing things really quickly. And I'm pleased to say that we've actually processed those grants and reliefs faster than any other local authority in the area. So that is a tribute to the way our people have worked. Government have suggested that they've perhaps been over generous with the 61 million and believe it should be closer to 50. We are arguing vociferously that that should not be the case, and that we would like to retain that balance with a degree of flexibility so we can continue to support businesses on the island, and also to go some way towards the £10 million black hole that we have in our finances. So I'll move on to the element that the leader alluded to, which is this new funding which has just been announced, That comes in two elements. There's a fund of £500 million, but that is shared between about 343 local authorities. We are waiting to find out precisely what requirements there are to access that fund and how much of it we will get. But given the numbers of local authorities it's covering, that we think is likely to be relatively modest. Then the other element of that new fund is a 75% support for our loss of income in all sorts of areas. We've lost income because we've not had income from the leisure centres, we've lost income from the floating bridge, we've lost income from the parking fees and a number of other smaller ones like licensing. Overall, that is certainly over 6 million, maybe rather more. Now, there's a 5% tolerance on that, so we probably won't get the whole of the 75%, but it will give us several millions towards that black hole. So we are waiting for the final detail on that. We don't know when we will get it. If it's issued in the way others have been, it comes along about 10 days after the announcement. So that will help us. We are, of course, actively looking at our expenditure, both revenue and capital. We have identified a number of potential deferrals of revenue expenditure amounting to about £5.5 million. And we will be looking at how we can meet the revenue costs. As the leader has said, we think with a lot of hard work and a fair wind, we may be able to finish this financial year without going into Section 115 territory. But I will remind the committee that we still have to find savings from the medium-term financial strategy for next year. Committee will be aware that we're no longer a participant in the business rates pilot retention scheme, a loss of about 1.9 million. And of course, the fair funding review has been deferred for a further year, and we're expecting around 2.5 million from that. So we do face a serious challenge for the next financial year, and we shall start working on that over the course of the next couple of months.
Thank you, Councillor Hutchinson, for that. The Chief Executive has indicated that he will update us on some other items. I think also I'd like to call the Director of Public Health to introduce the paper that is going to Cabinet, but of course which we scrutinise on the outbreak control plan after that, before opening up to questions. So, Chief Executive.
Thank you, Chairman. I will be very brief because I would, with your indulgence, apologies, Chairman, something's just happened to my screen.
We can still hear you.
Excellent. Well, in that case, I shall just keep talking. So with your indulgence, Chairman, I would like to bring the Assistant Chief Executive in to talk about some of the comms and media work that's gone on over the last 4 weeks, which she's led and I think has been an exemplar of really, really good practice. So as I previously said to members, we've seen this phase as a challenge between responding and recovery. A lot of recovery going on at the moment. We've reopened the libraries with effect from yesterday on a click and collect type basis, so taking very cautious steps, but that's good to get the libraries reopened. Registrars are now open again, and people able to go in and register births and arrange marriages. They've been closed for some time. We're looking very much to the government's guidance on leisure centres and when we can reopen leisure centres. We're here in mid-July, but again, we need to just wait and see what comes with the latest announcements. and we're targeting the 20th of July to reopen museums. I think we can start to think about leisure centres and museums more confidently, given the announcements about the government underwriting some of our lost income that Councillor Hutchin was referring to a little bit earlier. I think one of the major things that I just want to leave members with, and then I think more may come out in questions, is that I think we have to give huge credit to our independent care sector and to our own adult social care staff and colleagues in the CCG and the Trust. So we've had no new outbreaks in care homes since the 24th of May. And that is a genuine all-round effort from everybody involved in that particular sector, working very hard, sharing experiences. And in a way, I'd like to say I'm not surprised. I think our care home management plan that we had to submit to government, we had some really, really positive feedback about the fact that it was championing best practice. The work with the independent care sector, and in fairness, they were doing with us, was highlighted as I say, best practice, and therefore, I think we're now starting to see the results of that work. We still have a long way to go, and I think that my big worry is that, you know, people are starting to think that the crisis is over. I think we still don't know yet what's going to come out of the 4th of May opening, and as people start to circulate more, what may happen. And I'm sure when you may say something more about the new mnemonic she's come up with, or she's seen from the University of Southampton, which is wash, walk and wear. So wash your hands as regularly as you can, walk at least 2 metres apart, and if you can't walk 2 metres apart, wear a face mask. So all those things are still relevant, as relevant now as they were back in March when the outbreak first started, and that's something that we're still focused on in terms of our messages. I'll stop there, Chairman, because I understand you've had a lot of people speaking. I know you want to bring Simon in, and I'd like Wendy to come in as well, just with a brief summary on those comments. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you very much, Chief Executive. If I could bring in Ms. Pereira first, and then the Director of Public Health.
Thank you, Chair. We've heard a lot this evening about the position that the Isle of Wight is in terms of its response to COVID, and the fact that there are some really good examples of how dealing with vulnerable people in extremely difficult settings have been exemplary across the board. And part of the outcome of that has been a groundswell of community involvement. So the community has really helped the island stay safe. It's been a collective, collaborative response. And the work that we've been doing with our comms and engagement since we've moved more into a response recovery mode has identified that as being something that we wanted to take forward. So that understanding that together, working together, we more effectively deliver protection for the island and for ourselves, for our friends, for our community. And that's the kind of ethos behind where we've been going with our campaigns. And we've had a three-tier structure of campaigns. So the first one is really about respect, protect, enjoy. And that the ethos behind that is that the majority of people, most of the time, needs to keep doing those really good behaviours that we've all been told about, and the Chief Exec has already outlined. You know, wash your hands regularly, walk 2 metres apart where you can, and if you can't, wear a face mask. Those things are absolutely critical for the island to continue to contain the virus. And as I said before, without the majority of people doing those things most of the time, we will be needing more people going through test and trace. So test and trace was our second pillar of campaign, and that was about making sure that people really understood if they experienced symptoms of COVID, they should get tested, and where they could get tested, and how the testing and tracing system worked. And over the last week in particular, you will have seen a lot of information coming out on our social media channels about how that worked. We've also been working with our visitor economy colleagues in business, particularly those who are opening up accommodation, to make sure that visitors to the island understand that if they experience symptoms, they know what to do about getting a test and what to do if the result is positive. And we developed a guidance note for accommodation to provide to visitors, which I have to say has been used as a good example across the UK and has been taken up by other local authorities. We've also just launched today a visitor charter, which sets out our expectations from visitors in terms of their need to respect the environment and current restrictions, to protect themselves and others, and to enjoy the island whilst they're here staying. The third pillar of the campaign that we're working on is in relation to outbreak management, and we're still working up the messaging around that. But it's important that we need to think about these in three stages. So the normal behaviours that we must all do, stage one, test and trace. If we don't do stage one, we will need to do stage two. If that happens, and we do it in the right way, hopefully when we're doing outbreak management, what we're doing is lots of preventative work and not necessarily work that means we're intervening and we're needing to intervene in situations. Those are the three levels of messaging that we're doing. We have had some national recognition across a lot of the work that we've been doing because of the positive and proactive stance that we're taking, and the fact that this is really collaborative with businesses, with community groups, and with key stakeholders across the island. And that probably sums up where we are with that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That's extremely helpful. And I would note from the chat bar that Councillor Lilly has requested a copy of the visitor's charter. I'm sure that would be very helpful for all committee colleagues, all councillors indeed, and those out to parish, town and community councils. And I said I would also ask the Director of Public Health to introduce succinctly his paper on the outbreak control plans. Councillor Mosdell, if you wish to add a few comments afterwards, can you indicate in the chat bar that you would wish to do so? Otherwise, I will then move to questions on all of these items. So, Mr. Bryant, please.
Many thanks, Chair. So, just to give a quick update on this committee report, the purpose of the report is to seek endorsement from the Cabinet to put in place what we need to do to deliver the outbreak control plan for the Isle of Wight. The content of the outbreak control plan are set out in paragraphs 10 and gives the themes and the areas we need to focus our plan on, including care homes, schools, high risk settings, think about the information we need, think about the test and the trace aspect, and vulnerable people. It also, the guidance sets out the governance arrangements which this report also establishes. So it establishes a local outbreak engagement board, which is a politically led board chaired by the leader. And it also sets out the establishment of the health protection board chaired by myself, which will manage the pandemic on a day-to-day and a weekly basis to ensure, as others have said, that we prevent and manage any outbreaks from coronavirus, so that the population is protected and we can manage the infection on the island. I will stop there. You've got the plan in the papers. I'm happy to take any questions as required.
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. And I note that the Cabinet member will answer questions, but hasn't indicated she wished to add to anything to that. So colleagues, we now open to questions on all of these items before us. May I suggest that we sort of focus on the outbreak control plan in a sort of a separate way. I know there may be some sort of back and forth on this, but anything on what you've already seen in terms of responses to questions that we have been posing over time, or in terms of the updates that we have heard today from the Cabinet members and others. So I will pause to see if anybody wishes to indicate in the chat bar they wish to ask a question on these items. At the moment, I haven't got anybody indicating. I'm hoping that that is not a glitch, because normally, colleagues, you're brimming with questions. And I can rely on the Vice Chair to open up the bidding for us on this. So, Vice Chair, Councillor Lilly.
Yes, I wish to thank all the officers and members and cabinet members for the work they've done. We have to say overall that the response has been amazing across our community. I wanted to ask, I know some surveys have been done through the voluntary sector, and I was going to wish to ask whether it's Wendy Pereira or John Metcalf, or the leader of the council, whether it would be good to do a survey of all the members, the councillors, who have been working hard in all their wards and constituencies and towns and parishes over this period of time, to see what lessons we have all learned and actually can feed into development of contribute to the planning of the outbreak plan and also the post-COVID recovery plan. Because all of the 40 Isle-of-Wight councillors, I think, have some interesting information and lessons learned from their work at grassroots level.
I'll take Councillor Lilly, Leader of the Council, Paul. Yes, please. Councillor Stewart.
I think, first of all, a good proposal. I think there will be an opportunity at the right time for members to feed into a central point their experience and learning. A number of members have been quite heavily involved in the voluntary sector work that's also been going on. And I think we've also looked at what's happening on elsewhere in the country to try and benchmark where we are. At the moment, the feedback I get is we're in a very, very good place. As you know, I also am a member of the local government association, Stronger and Safer Communities Board, and I've offered to do some work on this at a national level, so that would fit very well with that proposal. We must not forget we're still in the middle of the pandemic. I think we've got to be careful that we don't kid ourselves into thinking it's almost passed us by. So there is a lot of learning, but one of the learning points is don't overstep the mark, I suppose, is the phraseology, is that stay safe. And there are a lot of people on this island I'm very, very worried about even coming out of their houses, and though they don't shout a lot, I'm very mindful of that, but there's a lot of concern. So I think the principle is a very good one. The timing of it might be a little bit premature, but we can look at that, when we have got a stable situation and we're comfortable with that. But I think, and also I would expect that members would be interested to know what we've learned. Should we be in the unfortunate place of getting a second wave, then we can quickly think about what we need to do to protect our community. And I think that's why the outbreak management plan that you've rightly put on the agenda is so important. We've all watched Leicestershire, we've all watched Bournemouth, we've all watched even Melbourne, Australia, and there is no doubt it doesn't take a lot for something to go from stable to very unstable. So I think anything we can learn and be prepared for is a good idea. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Stewart. Councillor Andre, you have a question.
Yes, Chair, thank you. My question relates back to the financial implications. I know that this is still very much an ongoing situation, especially in terms of our finances, and I'm grateful to Councillor Hutchinson for reassuring us that certainly, at the current time, we are not facing a Section 114 situation. I note from Paper B, Appendix H, which aligns with Councillor Hutchinson's estimates of the lost income, but offsetting this, we have received various pots of money from government, some ring-fenced, some not. Now, I am aware that record is being taken of this, but it would certainly be useful. I expect it will go to audit committee, but from a corporate scrutiny point of view, it would be useful if we could have some kind of view of where we're currently at, because obviously this needs to be balanced very closely against income, and also we need to be mindful of the position with our reserves. I also note, in response to Councillor Lilly's question, I think, in terms of the revenue that has been received from White Community Energy, I'm a little concerned that as a capital receipt, it's noted that that could be considered as a potential mechanism for funding shortfalls. Is that going to be part of our potential rationale going forward, that we are potentially going to be using capital receipts for funding revenue shortfall?
I'll ask Councillor Hutchinson to deal with that, but I'll just preface it with a reminder that the budget and where we are standing will probably be looked at in further detail in September, when we can unravel the government's myriad of information to give you a more accurate picture. But I'll happily let Councillor Hutchinson go.
Okay. Technically, it's we're not able to use capital money to prop up revenue. Capital expenditure has to show that we've bought some kind of asset, which has and typically those assets have to be substantial. So, on the revenue side, we were looking at that only this morning, and there's around about 7.7 million that look as if we have a shortfall of. So we've got to look at every aspect of our expenditure, control it as tightly as we can. I can tell you we're looking down. I think our treasurer described it as he was searching down the back of the sofa. There are many, many small amounts of money that you can defer or alter. We're doing our absolute best to keep out of Section 114 territory, because as you know, if we get that kind of notice, it triggers a stop on all sorts of expenditure, and it makes the council almost impossible to manage. So that really is last-ditch stuff. We think we are going to be able to cope, but we are going to take our assets really right down to the wire. You know that we are required to keep a basic 7 million in, because next year there may be some other issues that we require us to dip into. We cannot plan to use reserves in a future year. So all I can say, Councillor Andre, is that we are searching every single line of expenditure to bring us back into budget. And of course, it's constantly changing, because governments are, I'm sorry to say, drip feeding money. This 500 million is the latest. We hear of money going to all sorts of other sectors of the economy that require support. I mean, they've just given, I think, 1.5 billion to the arts. So we await anxiously information from the Treasury as to how we will be funded longer term and strategically, rather than what we're getting at the moment. We're coping with what we're getting at the moment, but it makes it very difficult to plan when we are looking at how we will spend money up to the end of this financial year and for the one following.
Can I just come back in with the supplement?
Certainly, Councillor
Andre. Thank you, Chair. With respect, I'm sorry if I didn't make it clear, but what I'm actually requesting is a record of the payments that we have received from government.
Uh, uh, Yes, we can provide you with that. I mean, in fact, we've had two very substantial chunks of money from government. Originally, I think we had a 5 million and then a further 4 million. And that means that instead of having a black hole of 19 millions, we've got a black hole of 10. So, and there are other bits still coming. So it is very much a moving feast.
Thank you for that. I see that the Chief Executive would like to comment. Colleagues, of course, if you do want to ask a question, do indicate in the chat bar. I do have an indication from Councillor Lilly otherwise. So Chief Executive.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to deal with the specific point that Councillor Andre made and to follow up Councillor Hutchinson's point, you're absolutely right, you cannot normally use capital to fund revenue. But as members will be aware, over the last 3-4 years, because we've not had a significant amount of capital, we have funded a lot of our capital programme from revenue. So our treasury management strategy would say, hey, if we have an underspend at the end of the year, we've got a choice about whether to put it into an allocated reserve, general reserves, or to fund capital. And we have done quite a lot of funding of capital projects in order to be able to deal with some important things, I think as the Director of Finance describes, to keep the wheels on the bus. So having been able to use revenue to fund capital, we can then convert that revenue, that capital back into revenue. So we have got a limited amount of ability to do that. And I think it's important that when members see how we might close the deficit, that is one of the things that we are absolutely focused on. I think just to pick up again, Councillor Hutchinson's point about money and how much we've made, how much we've had from government. So we have had £9 million from government, but as we set out in the previous report, we have had substantial additional costs in dealing with COVID, and most of that additional money has gone towards meeting those costs. So additional costs of provisioning care homes, additional costs of supporting to just domiciliary care workers, additional costs of PPE, additional costs in terms of preparing for how we might deal with and I have to say an excess of deaths and how we would manage to cope with that. So a lot of that money has actually gone to the additional costs that we incurred in terms of preparing for a reasonable worst case scenario in March, which was predicted on an R value of about 3.43, which was which would have had a very, very serious impact on our work and our capacity and what we did. So hopefully that gives you a bit more of a steer, Chair, in terms of those two issues.
Thank you for that. Can I bring in Councillor Lilly at this point, and then I will bring in myself. Councillor Lilly.
Thank you. Yes, I just got two questions, and then that will be me done. One is it's really towards public health, probably towards either Councillor Modsell or Mr. Bryant. We know obviously how many cases have been so far, and we know the numbers of obviously sad deaths, right? Has there been analysis by public health or the NHS of where, you know, the history of those cases, how they actually got infected, right? And, you know, where did they come from, what part of the island, etc. And is there, from that analysis, which I'm sure has been done, we've actually got some lessons learned of how we could actually prevent it in the future? That's my first question. My second question, I'll give it this time, is to do with the rock and the hard place, which is to do with the opening up of the island. And obviously, I come from Ryde, and a big issue for our economy is the Fastcat and ferry actually starting again. It's actually important also for the Bay Area, because that links the trains and brings a huge amount of footfall traditionally into our communities. But there's the balance of protecting our island community from a further outbreak, and also our economy. it's a, again, I say, a rock and a hard place. It's a very difficult one. And I would be grateful for the views of officers and members, cabinet members in this regard. Thank you.
So two questions there from the Vice Chair. I think the first one is for Mr. Bryan to respond to.
Many thanks, Councillor Carrick. Let me just pick up, I can pick up probably both points, I'm sure others will support. So with regard to locations and deaths, you have to, you're absolutely right, everyone is a tragedy we didn't want to happen. And the numbers on the Isle of Wight are thankfully very small, so doing analysis like that isn't particularly helpful because of the, it's just skewed by small numbers. What we have got is the report done by Public Health England, which did show some of those disparities in the difference in people catching coronavirus and sadly dying from it. So we are really using that to make sure that our outbreak plan is targeting those communities most at risk from the impact of COVID. So we are definitely doing that and looking at where those populations are on the Isle of Wight to ensure we can provide the right level of support and intervention and prevent further spread. So it is really, really important and something we'll be doing. And the test and trace service does allow us to understand where the infection is spreading. It doesn't quite go as far as working out how they got it, kind of the next bit, because actually once they're very sick and in hospital, we need to focus on their treatment and make sure it doesn't spread further. And then with regard to the economy, others will be well placed to talk about this. I think you're right, we need to balance up the opening of the economy with preventing the spread of infection, which is why I'm working very closely with the Director of Regeneration and Recovery. And also, we need to remember that actually we need to think about the 2 metres social distancing, the hand hygiene, and all the measures that the Deputy Chief Executive mentioned. If we can do that, we will prevent the spread of infection, which is why we're working very closely with the Visit Isle of Wight and other settings to make sure that they can support these messages so that even if there is an increase in the number of people visiting the Isle of Wight, we still maintain good hand hygiene, good social distancing to further prevent the spread. And I always say, I'm not the director of COVID, I'm the director of public health, and we know that the economy is really important for health. So we do need to balance those up together.
Chair, I could probably start by addressing the second question, and then I would refer you to the Assistant Chief Executive. So
that would be great.
From the outset, I've been clear, as soon as the fast caps can be reinstated properly, I'm very supportive of that, because they are a crucial part of our economic development and growth, and the day trippers in particular. But I think the Assistant Chief Executive, who is on the call, could just explain this is not a simple arrangement. There's a lot of complexities, but I know she will be able to answer this, so if you're happy, I would defer to her.
Certainly, if the Assistant Chief Executive could give us some insight, that would be great.
Thank you, Chair. If I could just explain, the position as we went into lockdown was that the island needed to guarantee that there would be a lifeline service provision for freight, key workers and health travel. And it did that through liaison with the DfT. And in effect, the grant that was put in place for the ferry operators was to provide us as an island community with that guarantee. So there was a level of service provision that enabled services to be delivered in terms of freight to and from the island, key workers to get across to and from the island, and for any necessary health travel that was still happening. And that was arranged by the Solent Exclusion Order, which took away the competitive regulations that were in place between operators and enabled them to collaborate on a timetable. The understanding of how that happens is that when you come out of that situation and regulations are put back in place, no one individual operator can be disadvantaged by how that happens. But also, bearing in mind that it is much easier to go into that situation than it is to come out of it, because it's easy to stop things getting them back in place when you've got a market demand operating, as well as ensuring that you have a minimum level of service, is actually quite a complex situation. So we're working with DfT. We have meetings with DfT on a weekly basis. We monitor the uptake of services, both foot passenger and vehicle passenger, on a daily basis. And we are working via DfT to ensure that those services come back on stream as soon as possible. One of the issues we've got is that the foot passenger service is disadvantaged by messages around public transport and avoiding public transport, and the links into Portsmouth and Southsea via the trains, and the fact that there are not many passengers on the trains at the moment. So we're also discussing with DfT messages that are more linked to safer travel as opposed to avoiding public transport, as a way of helping people to understand that transport can be used, but you have to use it in a safe way. So it's an ongoing discussion, it's a complex situation, it's related to market conditions improving, but it's also related to ensuring that we try and move forward with what is more of an economic recovery minimum service than a guaranteed lifeline service with flexibility to put additional services on. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I now have Councillor Kennett and then Councillor Hollis.
Thank you, Chairman. The question I'd like to ask you is, given the way that people on the island have really put together,
Councillor Kennett, we're getting a bit of feedback. Could you? Councillor Kennett, sorry, there's a lot of noise coming over at my end. Could you re-ask your question?
Sorry, I'll start again quickly.
Thank you, Councillor Kennett. I think
I think the really good work that we've seen across the island during this pandemic, and the pressures that we've seen on adult social care and the care section altogether across the island, is there some way in the future, we don't know when that's going to be, but in the future, that we can capture that? Communities have come together, nobody's told them to do that. Voluntary sector have been amazing, town and parish councils have pulled together. At some point, when we've got time to breathe and think about it, would it be worth perhaps trying to capture that more formally and see what we can take forward and what we can gain from this? There's been very little that we can gain from this, but what we have gained is the goodwill of people right across this island, and it would be good somehow in the future to capture that. Thank you. Sorry about the headphones.
Thank you for that, Councillor Kennett.
Would you like to come in there?
Councillor Mosdell, yes, please.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know that I sit on the Integrated Care Partnership, and at that meeting it's been discussed that whole piece of work across the whole system, how important that has been. I think we need to make sure that we do capture everything. I'm sat in this meeting, I've got emails coming through from Adult Social Care, probably the same email that John Metcalf had that was able to update you that we've had no new cases within the care home sector since the 24th of May. I think we have worked together really, really well. My thanks will go out across the whole sector, you know, from what everybody has done to work together. But actually, there is already that start, starting from the Integrated Care Partnership working down, saying, how have we all worked together so well? What was the good? What was the bad? I'm the first one to say we don't want to just sit there and pat each other on the back. You know, there will be lessons that are learnt. But as a local authority, the one thing that we have done is come out shining out of this, I think, especially within the adult social care and how well they have worked together. You know, Ian Lloyd's work that he did, you know, pulling all those community, you know, I came into your community calls and it was just fabulous what everybody did. You know, so yes, absolutely, it's already started, but we have to remember we are not at the end of this. We are in the middle. You know, I have to keep reiterating that to people. You know, my daughter works within a care home sector, and it's like going into, you know, a very strict area. You know, they're really careful what they do. They are very acutely aware within care homes of what is there. It is the invisible enemy, and we need to make sure that we keep up the pace of how we ensure it doesn't get in within the care homes, and also how we ensure that, you know, the voluntary sector is still able to work with those most vulnerable in society.
Thank you for that, Councillor Mosdell. Councillor Hollis, sorry, Councillor Kenner, did you have any further questions before I move on?
Thank you for that response, Councillor Mosdell. I think this is not something we're going to look at in the immediate future, but for the longer term, there's lessons to be learned, I think, from all of this for us. And just thank you to everybody for what they have been doing. It's been a sensational response on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
Sorry, can I just say absolutely, but also from, you know, if we're going to thank the local authority, I have to say as well, our housing and our homeless team have just been outstanding, absolutely outstanding. You know, and I'm happy to update you at any point of the situation we are at that point with that.
Thank you. And I would absolutely concur with what you've just said there as well, Councillor Mosdell. I'm sure we all would. I have Councillor Hollis next, and then no other person has indicated to speak. I think I might ask a couple of questions myself from the chair, and then I think we might be able to wrap this item up and perhaps have a comfort break after that point. So if members have specific resolutions that they would like to put, just have in mind phrasing those. A couple of commitments have already been made in the general discussion, so they may not necessarily be resolutions. But Councillor Hollis first.
Yes. I don't know whether people or how many people are aware that every person that lands in Cowes, the harbour authorities, they take a levy. And I always thought that if you take a levy from someone coming to the island, it should go to benefit the island. And it seems that over the years that levy has been used for ingratiating the harbour authorities into buying more and more property, which competes against the good private sector on the island. And I would ask that whether the council could look at actually talking to the harbour authorities, who claim that they do so much for the community, but some of us are still looking for that. And whether actually some of that money could go to helping us on the island, and not towards buying up property.
A very interesting question there. Who can take that? Would that be for the leader or?
I'll pick that up. I think Councillor Hollis, in his usual incisive way, has identified a fact. But also there are some wider pictures around this in terms of the role of the Harbour Master, which we need to look at. I think, you know, as Stuart Councillor Hutchinson has indicated, you know, the council has taken itself, if you like, to the wire to make sure its community is protected, which is the right thing to do. But we now have to look at all possible options going forward to try and rebuild our financial position. And if there is money coming in, we certainly should take that away and look at it. So I'll take that away from Councillor Hollis direct. I don't think you probably need to make a proposal on it. I'm happy to take that away and look at that, and I can undertake to report back to you, just as I will about the floating bridge, before we finish tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Stewart. So a couple of questions from myself, if I may. One to the Director of Public Health, Mr. Bryant. Data and access to necessary data has been very much in the news and in the last week or so, and you covered a little bit of that in your remarks. Are you confident that you are now getting all the data that is necessary for you to plan for, to project, but particularly plan for that I think it's called the reasonable worst case scenario, the side of things. So Mr. Bryan, if you are able to respond.
Yeah, many thanks, Councillor Garrett. So over the last couple of weeks, we've seen more and more information coming through. We've just got to be mindful that we get information, not just kind of a load of data that is not meaningful. So we've now got all the testing results, which is really positive. We're beginning to get data at the kind of relevant geographies, which is really positive. And I've just been on a regional meeting to kind of really help to understand how they're analysing that regionally and locally. So I'm confident we're getting data. We can always get more data on certain aspects, but I think we've got data to manage outbreaks, which we've had all the way through the pandemic. The test results, as I said, is really, really helpful, and we're now getting all of that. So yes, we're not in the same place that we were 3 weeks ago, and as the data comes through more regularly, we need to interpret that and understand that, which has been a job in itself, but I'm confident we're getting the data we need.
Thank you for that, Mr. Bryant. It's extremely important, obviously, that we've got data that we can use and not just to swim in, so to speak. Another question I have, I think it would go to the Legal Council. It's around about the COVID-19 engagement board, and I see in terms of reference, one of those is leading engagement with local communities, and some of our discussion this afternoon has been about the engagement that we've had, how people have stepped up to things. I just wonder if the leader is able to sort of give a view on how that engagement with local communities will be led, sort of obviously in an emergent way at the moment, but over time embedding the lessons learned.
So we've already started engagement with our communities. The two specific examples, one of your deputy actually, is doing some very interesting work with colleagues at RIDE, where we're looking at the whole concept of post-COVID, if you like, new world, and trying to work with RIDE Town Council, who have got some innovative ideas coming forward, which I think as an Ottawa council we should adopt. Obviously, I'll take you back to when we introduced the conditions in Newport High Street. I think that as an example where we wanted to make sure people understood they need to be 2 metres apart, etc., etc. And we did the same in Cowes. And although people may have found it, I would describe it as perhaps a little bit clunky, what it did do is it really flagged up to people, this is serious, you do need to distance. And that remains the case, actually. The 1 metre is only if you've got mitigating factors like face covering and things like that. So we've also had a meeting with Newport, who are probably slightly less advanced in their overall thinking at the moment than RIDE, but we've got a lot of work going on about shaping places and the new towns fund, the historic town fund. So I think what we've got to do, and it goes back to your questions earlier, we've got to learn the lessons of COVID. We've got to accept that the world is new and it's not going to go right back where it was before, because we can't. And then we've got to work with our town and parish councils. Now, we've already got some work going on with the Bay councillors to engage with them. And I shall also be introducing a youth engagement as well. I think we forget that out in the wider island, we have a lot of young people whose view on a whole range of digital, what the new world should look like, etc., is something we should capture, because it's going to be their world tomorrow. So another prominent piece of work that the Cabinet have already agreed to do and are underway developing is going to be engaged with our youth. And there's a lot of very positive young people out there who would want to contribute to how we go forward. So I think, in summary, we've started that journey. I think it's one we're keeping very flexible, because there are different ideas coming in. And I'd like to think that if you ask me that question in a few months' time, when we've gone down the line, I can give you a more structured answer.
Thank you, Councillor Stewart. I see that the Chief Executive would just like to add to your comments. Chief Executive.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I think just to add to the Leader's comments, one of the things that we learned through the umbrella of the app was to create an engagement board with representatives of all the islands community. And that's very much
part of our thinking in terms of the outbreak management plan as we take that forward.
Yeah.
So, taken on board, as Linda has said, that will build on the type of expertise that he's talking about and how he pulls that together. But effectively, it would be good to get a standing board of representatives that we could liaise with on a regular basis about this particular topic and also about the recovery topic. And we needed to get some work in place quickly, which is why we've met with Newport and Ryde. But I think that trying to establish that as quickly as possibly, that's it's going to be a priority for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Thank you, Chief Executive, and to both of you for those comments. You may recall at our last meeting, I talked about the fact that so much has been done to people necessarily over the last 100 and something days. And people have responded to that almost completely with the same desire and the same commitment to keep us all safe. And being able to tap into that, I think, is one of the most important things before we get too much back to whatever, and it's an awful kind of phrase, the new normal, that we gather the best of what's been happening. So I'm encouraged by what you've been saying there. Colleagues, I think three commitments were made to us as a committee through our questioning. One was that, I think that came from Councillor Lilly, around undertaking a survey of members of this council and others to gain that grassroots understanding. That builds a little on the question that I had. So I think that commitment is there. Councillor Andre, you pressed around getting a record of all those monies that have come to us, and I think that was agreed as well. And the Leader of Council was also given the commitment to Councillor Hollis, a very interesting question around the levy exacted in Cowes. My feeling is that those don't need formal resolutions because I think they have been taken on board. Colleagues, do you have formal resolutions, or shall we take it that certainly the, from my point of view, the outbreak control plan is as far as anybody who isn't an expert in these things can see, is fit for its purpose, and I'm sure that Cabinet would want to then adopt it, and more generally around our scrutiny around the pandemic. Of course, there are places for other parts of the scrutiny. There will be the policy and scrutiny on health next week, and then of course Councillor Churchman's committee later this month, I believe. And of course, although it is a separate function to scrutiny, Councillor Tindall's audit committee later this month as well, looking at particular things around the spending of monies, but also around risk as well. So unless anybody wishes to formally move a resolution, shall we take it that we are content with what we've heard? We very much welcome the openness that we're getting from Cabinet members and from officers, as we would always expect around this. So I'll just leave a few moments just for anybody who wishes to suggest that there should be a formal resolution, otherwise we will be able to move on. Yeah. I've got Councillor Quirk.
I agree with your sentiments, but I do think we ought to formalise a resolution that actually states that.
Okay, and I can see Councillor Lilly, you wish to comment as well. I'm also reminded that I should, and I do apologise, it's my responsibility to you, to the committee, to report that I, as chair, was asked, because the outbreak control plan went on to the forward plan within the 28-day time horizon that's normally expected, that I was consulted on that. It was obvious, of course, that it should be included on the forward plan as a matter of urgency, and I report that formally to you. Councillor Lilly, if you may comment whilst we see if we can capture what my remarks were just saying. I think you have just muted yourself, Councillor Lilly.
Sorry. Pressed it, yeah. I just wish to agree with Councillor Quirk that we do need to, I think, have a resolution, because I think we need to put very much a cross party message to the community that this scrutiny committee is looking very seriously at this issue, and actually is also, you know, we're a critical friend, but we should also be one of giving praise. And I think when you actually look, and I've looked at detail and read everything in detail, as you know, 99% is extremely good work on behalf, and I think it has to be recognised that I think we are ahead of the game, and I think we do need a resolution to say to the Cabinet that we accept the reports and actually recommend their recommendations. Thank you.
So what I'm hearing is that there should be two recommendations, therefore. I think the first one is that we find that the outbreak control plan is fit for its purpose and recommend to Cabinet they go forward with the recommendations before them at their meeting on Thursday, subject, of course, to their further deliberations. So I will move that from the chair and seek a second. Jointly, Councillors Lilly and Quirk have seconded that. And I agree with you. You're persuading me that indeed it sends a very strong message that that we are very much of one mind on this issue. So in the formal way, I will then take the vote. So I will call your names in order as it is on the front piece of our agenda. Answer either for, against, or abstain. So for myself, it is for. Councillor Andre.
For.
Councillor Churchman.
For.
Councillor Hollis.
For.
Councillor Lilly.
For.
Councillor Merwell.
For.
Councillor Quirk.
For.
Councillor Tindall.
For.
And Councillor Kennett. I think you might still be muted.
Four.
And that is four as well. So that is unanimous for that resolution. The other resolution, which I think should be worded along the lines of that the committee welcomes the openness and transparency of Cabinet members and officers in responding to our questions, that we remain committed to scrutinising this issue in a constructive way, and that it should inform our own work plan in the coming months. That's a bit on the fly, so colleagues, do you feel that captures enough of what I was saying earlier? I think so. There's lots of thumbs up for those who don't see these things. Lots of thumbs up. So I think that wording is now before you. I'll move that from the chair. Seek a second as before, and then we'll take a vote. Second beaten just slightly. Councillor Lilly before Councillor Quirk, with Councillor Hollis in a very strong third place there. Thank you. Thank you very much. So I'll put that to the vote in the same way. The order I shall take is on the front piece. So for myself, that is four. Councillor Andre.
Sorry, I'm having problems with my mute. It's four.
Thank you, Councillor Andre. Councillor Churchman.
Four.
Councillor Hollis.
Four.
Councillor Lilly.
Four.
Councillor Merwell.
Four.
Councillor Quirk.
Four.
Councillor Tindall.
Four.
Councillor Kennett.
Four.
Thank you very much. Again, another unanimous resolution. I think that was a very, very informative session around what is obviously the most important issue that probably will face any of us in our local government careers, either as members or as officers. I think at this time, because I had promised to take a comfort break about half an hour ago, that we will adjourn for a comfort break and then resume our agenda. So we will resume at 18:40, which is 6 minutes time by the clock that I'm looking at.